killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 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 and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. I am Danny, and I'm joined with...
Gloire.
That's correct. And today we've got quite a disturbing, disgusting topic for you. It's the one of nightmares, if I'm being blatantly honest. But however, it proves that no matter how hard you try, evidence is always left behind. So take that into mind next time you're trying to commit a crime. Not that you should be committing crimes, but anyway. So... today we are dealing with the acid bath murders. Glory's face is not impressed.
What?
Acid bath, as in like acid. The stuff that burns you.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes, so we are dealing with serial killer John. I think you pronounce it Hay. I'm not 100% sure. But he was born to an average family as John George Hay and moved in Lincolnshire, and then he moved to West Riding of Yorkshire when he was younger. So this serial killer story takes place in the UK. The boy was a fan of classical music and played the piano and even won a scholarship to Queen Elizabeth Grammar School in Wakefield Cathedral. Hay had an odd sense of humor, however, and was bullied at school. And he was a lover of strange pranks, where he even used to pull the stool out of the elderly organist as she would sit down to play. That's pretty harsh. Shame. She's an old lady and you're taking her chair away. And he would also ended up chasing a pig around its sty until it died from exhaustion, which breaks my heart. The poor little pig. When he finished school, Hay worked as an apprentice engineer at a firm. He was subsequently fired for adding sugar to the boss's petrol tank. Yeah, I don't know. He's a bit weird from the start, I'm just saying. He held other jobs in insurance and advertising, but was once again fired after he was accused of stealing from the cash register. In 1934, Hay married Betty Hammer. However, the marriage did not last long as he was arrested 4 months later for car fraud. Listen, I'm getting married soon. If my husband got arrested 4 months later, I also wouldn't be impressed. I'm just saying. Don't side-eye me.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you have to say for yourself?
To see why.
Defend yourself.
Not why, but yeah.
Defend yourself. He doesn't want to defend.
No comments.
We'll see you in 4 months. I'm kidding. Whilst he was incarcerated, Betty gave birth to a daughter who was given up for adoption, and then she divorced Hay. And the reason she gave her up for adoption was because in that time in society, a woman living as a single mom was not accepted in society. In 1936, Hay was released from prison and moved down to London. He became a chauffeur to arcade owner William McSwan, who would later become his first victim. He left his employment with McSwan and invented a new persona, William Cato Adamson. Addison was a solicitor with multiple offences, including in London and Guildford, Surrey, where he sold fraudulent stocks and shares to unsuspecting victims. This scam ended when someone noticed his fictitious surname was spelt wrong on the letterhead. He was then handed a 4-year prison sentence for fraud, but subsequently spent several years in and out of prison. During his last stretch in prison, Hay realized that he kept getting caught because his victims were able to alert the authorities. And from here, Hay learned about French murderer George Alexander Serret, I'm probably saying that so wrong, but it's fine, who disposed of his victims using sulfuric acid. And he became keen to try this method, and so Hay began experimenting with acid and field mice which were in his cell. So, I mean, there's already a bit of a problem because they say one of the first signs of a serial killer is the torture of animals, and the fact he already tortured pigs when he was younger already is a big red flag. And now to be just killing mice in your cell is also a little bit dodgy. In 1943, Hay was released from prison and he began his murder spree. And his first murder was William MacSwan. Hay had a chance of meeting with MacSwan once he was released from prison at a pub in Kensington. MacSwan was now working with his parents, Donald and Amy, collecting rent from their London properties. On the 6th of September 1944, MacSwan disappeared. Hay later confessed to enticing MacSwan into a basement of a building and then bludgeoning him to death. His motive was jealousy, as he wanted MacSwan's lifestyle. He placed the body into an industrial barrel and poured concentrated sulfuric acid onto him. 2 days later, Hay had returned to find the remaining contents of the barrel could then be poured down the drain. That's so disgusting, if you ask me. Yuck. Hay then told William's parents that he had gone into hiding, as in William had gone into hiding, in Scotland to be avoided, to avoid being drafted into the war. Hay then took over his collection duties but kept the money for himself. The parents became curious why their son had not returned from Scotland when the war was over, and so Hay told them he was coming back to visit on the 2nd of July 1945 and lured Donald and Amy into the same house where they were expecting to see their son, and instead again he bludgeoned them to death in the basement and again disposed them in the sulfuric acid. He took their possessions, which totaled what is now equivalent to £250,000. Right. And he then moved into the Onslow Court Hotel. By 1947, Hay was starting to run out of money due to his excessive gambling addiction. And to replenish his fund, Hay needed a new victim. And this is where we meet Dr. Archibald and Rose Henderson. Hay met a couple when he was viewing their flat, pretending to be interested in purchasing it from them. Rose found out that Hay played the piano and asked him to play at their housewarming party of their new property. Whilst at the party, Hay stole the doctor's gun. Hay then invited Dr. Henderson to his workshop in Crawley to show him an invention he'd been working on. Instead, Hay shot the doctor in the head and then contacted Rose Henderson to tell her that her husband had fallen ill and needed her to come right away. He then also shot Rose on arrival and disposed both of their bodies again in barrels of acids. He then forged a doctor's letter, well, not a doctor's letter, but a letter with a doctor's name on, to ensure that he was given control of all their assets and their possessions. In 1949, Hay was still living in the Oswald Court Hotel and calling himself an engineer, but again, he was running out of money. Now we deal with Olive, who was 69 and was a wealthy widow, who also lived in the Onslow Court Hotel. She knew Hay was supposedly an engineer, so she told him about her idea for false fingernails. I don't know what you mean by false fingernails. Do you get me? Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if that's some also other term, if fingernails are not the human fingernails, but I was a little bit lost there. Anyway, Hay then took the opportunity to invite Olive to his workshop. On 18th of February 1949, he shot her in the neck with Dr. Henderson's revolver and removed her jewelry and expensive black Persian fur coat she had been wearing and put her in an acid bath. She was then reported missing 2 days later. We then meet Sergeant Lamborn, who headed up the case, and he spoke to John Hay, who told him that he saw Olive before she left the hotel that day wearing a black Persian coat. Lamborn then found it odd that Hay lived in the hotel whose occupants were mainly older people, and she felt an uneasy feeling about Hay and thought he might be involved. A description was sent out to all police divisions by Inspector Sims, who was another inspector on the case. But by that evening, he had also started looking into Hay due to Lamborn's comments. Sims went upstairs to speak to Hay in his room where he was invited in. He recalled the same statement that he had told Lamborn, but except he told them this time that Olive had been carrying a red handbag. However, John Hay didn't realize that Inspector Sims already knew him and had questioned him years later and knew he was a con man. But fraud doesn't really mean murder because he'd interviewed him for some of his fraud cases. By the following day, Olive's image had been up in the newspapers and distributed to taxi drivers, but no one had seen her since the departure from the hotel. Finally, another occupant from the Onslow Court Hotel came forward to tell the police that she had seen Olive in the hotel's lobby that morning. Olive had told the witness that she was driving to Crawley with Mr. Hay. He had been the only witness to see her alleged solo departure from the hotel that day. Sims set out in getting inside this workshop because now clearly something was up. The workshop was sparse with a few boxes, tools, and empty bottles of sulfuric acid littered on the sideboards. The windows had been painted over and the little light entered the building. The only item that looked out of place was a leather hat box that was locked and was taken into evidence. Sims then received the report of the contents of the hat box, which, when they had forced open, found the revolver which belonged to Dr. Henderson and 8 rounds of ammunition in it, as well as heavy red cellophane paper, a receipt from the dry cleaner shop for the black Persian fur coat. So talk about literally finding the smoking gun. In a nearby town of Hormshan, the shop had bought jewelry that matched Olive's jewelry's description, and the jeweler identified Hay as the man who sold the pieces. Hay was kept at the police station while investigating. Officers drove to the hotel to search Hay's room. They returned hours later to the station with several items in their possession. Their search brought back a shirt covered in bloodstains and a penknife with blood on it. They also recovered a shopping list written by Hay, which included items for which could be used to dispose another body, including acid, rubber gloves, cellophane, and cotton wool. They also had jewelry and the black fur coat with them. And this is a quote from Hay. "If I tell you the truth, you would not believe it. The truth sounds too fantastic for belief. Mrs. Dunrod Deacon no longer exists. She has disappeared completely and no trace of her can be found again. I have destroyed her with acid. Every trace has gone. And how can you prove murder if there's no body?" Hay confessed to killing Olive, the McSwans, and the Henderson, plus 3 others. However, the 3 others are not confirmed. He told the police that he'd been drinking the blood of his victims and it was driving him insane. However, this was also not ever proved. However, Hay hadn't considered that what had left behind. The forensics soon realized that the brown sludge that had been left behind in the workshop was human remains. On closer inspection, pathologist Keith Simpson found 28 pounds of body fat, part of a foot, gallstones, and part of a denture identified as Olive's by her dentist. In early August 1949, Hay finally went to trial at the Sussex Assizes Court. However, the jury took only a few minutes to deliberate his fate and found him sane and guilty of murdering 6 people. They also ordered that he would not be allowed to appeal his sentencing. When being transferred to Wadsworth Prison, Hay asked one of the prison guards if it would be possible to have a trial run of his hanging to iron out any issues. In prison, his physician, Dr. Yellowless, noted his childhood nightmares, which Hay claimed lured him into becoming a bloodlusting murderer. And I'm going to read again. "I saw a forest of crucifixes, which gradually turned into trees. At first, I seemed to see dew or rain running down the branches, but when I came nearer, I knew it was blood. All of a sudden, the whole forest began to twist about and the trees streamed with blood. Blood ran from the trunks, blood ran out the branches, all shiny and red. I felt weak and seemed to faint. I saw a man going round the trees, gathering the blood. When the cup he was holding in his hand was full, he came up to me and said, 'Drink,' but I was paralyzed. The dream vanished, but I still felt faint and stretched out with all my strength towards the cup." I don't know. That sounds so demonic to me.
Yeah, it does.
That is so demonic to me. Like the crucifixes, for one. And the whole thing of drinking the cup of my blood of the covenant. Yeah. That is so demonic.
Sounds like some witchcrafty
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that sounds... No, that is just the symbolism of, like, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, but forget that. Just how gory that is.
I know. And imagine he was having these as a kid. Like a kid.
Yeah, well, earlier when you mentioned that...
Okay, actually, this is a question I have for you. So they often say you can tell a serial killer if as a kid they, like, for example, killed animals, right? Now, what do you... How do I put this? Do you think, like, serial killer, it's like something wrong with them? Like, it would be like a mental disorder? Do you get what I'm coming from? Like,
I would what say, yeah.
What just triggers it in someone's brain, like as a kid? What sets it off that this person's now gonna have serial killer tendencies and end up? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, for him to get to the point where he's drinking blood, I believe there would be demonic activity there.
Okay, but like, for example, as a kid, what as a little kid, what would he have had involved?
He would have had some kind of trauma or visual experience that would have messed with his brain.
So you think there was a cause? You don't think there's just something that...
No, it doesn't just happen.
Okay, no.
Probably you'd find that somehow his innocence in that area was broken at a young age. Maybe from, like I said, a traumatic experience. Maybe a really bad horror movie. Or something. But yeah.
No, I agree. But even those dreams, I mean, that's very demonic imagery coming through. But on Wednesday, the 10th of August, 1949, John George Hay, the acid bath murderer, was hanged at Wadsworth Prison while a crowd of 500 people gathered outside. I don't know if I could go watch someone get killed. No. I think that would mess me up.
Yeah, that's too messed up.
Right. His motives were never clear, despite his insanity pleas. Some believe he thought he was a vampire who enjoyed drinking blood. Others thought he was a cold-hearted killer who believed he could get away with murder if the body was never found. If Hay had been more meticulous, he might as well have continued to get away with it, unhindered with his crimes. But you see, he had this idea that if there was no body, there was no crime, but he didn't realize he left a whole bunch of evidence that still allowed them to prove he had killed these people.
Yeah.
Because like we said, we found the brown sludge and we found the gun and stuff like that. And so his whole ideology of there's no body, there's no crime, only got him so far. Because yes, it stopped them from finding him sooner, because if they didn't find a body, then you don't really know where you're looking.
Yeah.
But it still didn't help. He thought that it meant he wouldn't be charged. He actually said to people in prison, he thought he actually wouldn't get charged with murder, which is a bit doof, if you ask me.
Yep.
But yeah, clearly some very psychological issues. There must have been... They've never spoken about past childhood trauma. They've never discovered anything that could have triggered it. But there must have been something if it had ended up like this. And I mean, even if he'd played some games that ended up opening doors, you know, kids, they like to play stupid.
Yeah.
They like to play with stupid demonic spiritual things, and like they think they're just playing games.
Yeah, like Ouija boards and stuff like
and
that.
And they think they're just playing games, but they're opening their lives to very serious problems.
Mm.
And he might have even just done that and ended up.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you think all of that stuff is a myth, well, good luck.
Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. But that is the acid bath murders. Very gruesome, very disgusting, if you ask me. I don't even want to know what that sounds like. It must just sound like imagine listening to a body dissolve.
Because
obviously chemical reactions is, I mean, I remember in science classes when we mixed chemicals, they would be like a sound, like some of them made like a fizzy sound.
Yeah.
Whatever. I can't even imagine the breaking down of bone.
Mm.
No, I'm good. I'm really, really fine. It's not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me. Or at least, although one mercy is that those people were dead before they went in, because if they went into acid alive, could you imagine?
Yeah.
It's the same. Which one of the disciples was put in hot oil?
I think it was John.
I could not imagine anything worse. I actually can't even. I can't imagine a worse way to die than be put in boiling hot oil.
And he didn't
die. I know, but like, imagine that must, like, I can't even, because, you know, actually, if you guys do research, the medieval killing ways are very gruesome.
Yeah.
I mean, even the guillotine from France, do you know that thing? You often the head didn't come off the first chop. So they would go one, two. So you're literally waiting there and you're feeling your neck getting cut until it falls off. Can you imagine that torture? No, honestly.
Yo.
Like, I actually, like, I don't even understand how people used to watch. I would be traumatized. Or when they used to burn people alive. People used to go and watch these things and throw, like, parties. And I was like, that is so sick in itself. Like, I wouldn't even want to go watch in America. They let people watch when they give lethal injections. I wouldn't even want to watch that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so inhumane. Like, I can't even imagine. I know there was one also in, like, the medieval time where they'd, like, put your forelimbs to horses and then call the horses in different directions. I'm serious. Yeah, it would pull you apart. Yeah. But that's insane. I still think the boiling oil is the worst one. That's the one I would be like, no.
One thing that always bugged me is that how would you be like if you survived that?
No, you wouldn't have skin left.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that would be so weird.
Oh, even hanging, because, you know, like, no, it's really fine. It's really inhumane, if you ask me. Or even like in the early persecution of the Christians, especially with Emperor Nero. I mean, he used to throw people into the ring with lions. The Christians used to throw the Christians into the arenas with lions.
To be honest, I know it sounds crazy, but I'd much rather die fighting for my life with lions than to burning oil.
I agree. At least you might have a chance. Maybe you knock the lion out.
If it's one lion, who knows what adrenaline could do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree. I'd take my chance with the lion. Maybe God will pull another Daniel in the lion's den. But even if you think about it, crucifixion was also absolutely a horrid way to die. Like, you'd be hanging and can't breathe. Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. There's a place in London called the London Dungeon, and I really want to go there. They've got all the, basically all the old medieval torture and how they used to do things. I'd love to go and see that. I was going to go see that, and then they wanted £32, and I was like, never mind. But next time I go to London, I'd like to go and see it. But that is all for the acid bath murders. Like we said, there is always evidence. Always. You can never get rid of evidence. But that is all for this week. We will see you next time.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.